Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 17th. Oh, it's the 17th of February.
Yeah, it is.
It's the Feast of Fornicalia. And we'll be bringing you news, views, things that you... You lucky people. It's the Feast of Fornicalia. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we'll be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing loose, kick up shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Perhaps I'd best explain about Fornicalia.
Yes, please do.
There is an ancient feast, an ancient Roman feast called Fornicalia. And
I'm Steve Ray.
And he's Steve Ray. And I'm going to vamp till Steve is ready. That'll be 20 minutes. The feast is they celebrate, depending on who you talk to, we celebrate anytime between the 11th and the 16th or the 18th or the one day everybody's sure it was not celebrated was the 17th. So of course, that's the day I will be celebrating Fornicalia today, the 17th. And I will be celebrating in the traditional Roman way, which, as I'm sure you know, the goddess Fornax is the goddess of the hearth and bread. So I will be, the traditional way is you clean out the winter ashes from the hearth and you bake new bread. And that's the Feast of Fornicalia. So I'll be doing that. And it'll be very exciting. So that's our...
if you say so.
That's... Hey, look, I didn't make up these Roman holidays. They're out there. You can look it up yourself.
Well, today's my wife's birthday, so we had to go out for her free breakfast at a local restaurant.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
And yesterday was Lunar New Year.
Yes.
You probably got onto your thing. So my son has a friend from Nepal. So I looked... They celebrate lunar months, but differently. Their New Year's is in April.
Oh.
When it's nice to go... Outside.
Right, exactly, right. Right, well, it's Year of the Dog. So, happy Year of the Dog.
Male or female?
Yes. Yes, I don't believe the Chinese Zodiac has cares one way or the other. Anyway, here's the news. Onavo, or Onavo, I don't know which, Onavo Protect. The VPN client, a virtual private network client acquired by Facebook back in 2013, is now popped up in the Facebook app. It is available both, of course, on the iOS and Android platforms under the banner, and it's actually in the Facebook app under the banner Protect. In the navigation menu, and clicking through on Protect redirects Facebook users to the Onavo Protect. Onavo, we'll call it Onavo, Protect VPN security app listing in your app store. Marketing Onavo within Facebook itself could lead to a boost in users for the VPN app, which promises to warn users of malicious websites and keep information secure, like bank account and credit card numbers, as you browse. But Facebook did not buy Onavo for its security protections. Instead, Onavo's VPN allows Facebook to monitor user activity across apps, giving Facebook a big advantage in terms of spotting new trends across the larger mobile ecosystem. For example, Facebook gets an early heads up about apps that are becoming breakout hits. It can tell which are seeing slowing user growth. It sees which apps' new features appear to be resonating with their users, and much more. Let me be clear. When you run a VPN, all of your data runs through someone else's server. Depending on how much you trust that other server, they are either that's either a good thing or it could be a very bad thing. Facebook has control of that server, and they are using the data from that server to spot trends. But of course,
they know everything already. But
well, right. These data have already helped Facebook in a number of ways, most notably in its battle with Snapchat. For example, we know that Facebook could tell that Instagram's launch of Stories, a Snapchat-like feature, was working to slow Snapchat's user growth before the company itself even publicly disclosed that fact. This past fall, Facebook snatched up the teen compliment app TBH, to be honest, and quickly integrated a similar Q&A feature into its social network soon after. This all took place before TBH had truly established itself as a new social network. Onavo's insights into TBH's fast rise and heavy engagement likely gave Facebook the heads up to buy that company. The Onavo app today has more than 33 million installs across the iOS App Store and Google Play. Around 62% of those are from Google Play, which could be another reason why Facebook is giving Onavo a push on iOS. After all, why should the Android users be the only ones being spied upon by Facebook? Onavo's App Store description explains that it is a part of Facebook and that it is used to, quote, improve Facebook products and services, gain insights into the products and services people value, and build better experiences, end quote. However, it's not likely that all Onavo users understand they're actually feeding Facebook the information that allows it to take on all challengers to its social networking empire. That empire also includes WhatsApp and Instagram. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Facebook's Onavo VPN spies on you. Your choices are, I'm not surprised, I'll remove it immediately, I don't use it, and I have no idea what any of that means. Interestingly, 38% of you are not surprised. 31% of you don't use it. 31% of you, sadly, have no idea what any of that means. And nobody has said they'll remove it immediately. And that's 32 votes total so far. But I know that you'll have more to say. So if you scroll down on the left under Fascinating Stuff, the first choice down there is forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the first item in the poll discussion is 17 Feb 18. Facebook's Onavo VPN spies on you. Two people have posted already. And we'd love to have you join that conversation. And, of course, you can join us by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
And a lot of people sort of have a misconception of what a VPN is. You know, they think it's privacy. Sort of. Privacy.
Limited.
Limited privacy. And the VPN service you're using, you're not private at all. You may be private to other places, but not to the service you're using.
Right. If I start up a VPN service and give anybody on Earth access to that VPN service, they tunnel through the internet in what's called a virtual private network. So no one else can read their stuff, and that's good. But I can because it's my server that you're going through.
All right. So everyone on Facebook using this, Facebook can read their stuff. So it's not just you, it's everyone else using Facebook too.
Yes, that's exactly right. So anyone using Onavo is voluntarily, well, or involuntarily, I guess, giving their information to Facebook to do with as it wishes.
Even more so than they already are.
Even more so than they already are. So that's the problem with something like Onavo VPN. The when it comes to any VPN, the real question is, who do you trust? Mm-hmm. Now, I have set up a private VPN for myself. The only one on it is me, and I already know what I'm doing.
You think
so?
Now, you sure of that?
I don't know what I'm doing, but I know I guess.
I wanted to clarify.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm having a weird problem. I set up a VPN service at my server at work so I can connect into it remotely. My iPad connects fine, but I can't get any other device to connect using all the same credentials. And I get a connection refused.
Unable. Is this from home?
No, at my office on my server.
No. Are you connecting?
From anywhere.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I'm using the same credentials because I created them.
Do you, did you limit the number of people who could connect? Is it,
yes, to 10.
Have you connected 10 times simultaneously with your iPad?
No.
I'm just wondering, is there any way to confuse it and it still thinks he's logged in?
Well, it shouldn't matter if 10 people can connect.
Yeah, but if he's tried it multiple times.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's an interesting thing.
Yeah, it should be 10 people at a time, not 10 people, period.
Right.
Well, that's, and there lies the challenge. You know, you got to check it out.
Without looking at the configuration, it's hard to tell.
I mean, because it could have, the multiple times that he was trying to log in, different times, it's like, oh, yeah, it's at the max and hasn't cleared.
Well, exactly. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rich, what's up?
Hello, guys. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you, too. Happy Fornicalia.
Question on Windows Explorer file, where you would go look for your in File Manager, I guess you would call it. If you go down to the left-hand side and you can see all the computers, this is kind of a work question. You can see all the computers on the network.
Yep.
It looks like it doesn't do this, but it looks like it's scanning across the top to see or find all the computers when you click on network.
Yep.
That's not happening.
Well,
seems like it's another one of those Windows 10's feature that they give you that doesn't allow it to continue to search for the other computer. So if I wanted to remotely connect into another computer, I wouldn't be able, I don't see it. I see some of the computers on the network, but I don't see all of them to go to the specific one that I want to connect to.
All right. The first thing you have to find out is if that other machine is in fact sharing a folder to the network.
Because one of the updates for Windows 10, this was working fine and there was no problem.
Question for you, though. Now, if you were to go to, say, one of the other computers, you know, that's on your network, can you see all the other computers?
No.
What I'm going to get at, though, is since it did the updates, you know how sometimes it can change the credentials, whether to discover new...
Probably Discovery got turned off.
Yeah,
because
Discovery got turned off.
That's a security precaution. Average people don't want Discovery turned on.
Now, this, just to go along with your question, though, this had happened like one or two computers updated, and then we couldn't see any other computers. And then, like, my computer was okay. It was fine. I could see every other computer. An update happened, and then I couldn't see it.
It's exactly what he's saying.
Yeah.
It looks like Discovery was turned off.
So Discovery is what needs to be, and that would have to be turned on every machine, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, certainly on yours on any other one that has the same problem. So what you do is you type network in the search box.
Okay.
And it brings up all those things, and there's one called Network and Sharing Center.
Okay.
Open that up, and there's a Change Advanced Sharing Settings, I think is what it says. Mm-hmm. Then you turn on Network Discovery and save it.
The other thing you can
this
do...
This is Windows 10, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
The other thing you can do is instead of turning Discovery on, which is easier, if you go to a run command and type /// and the IP address of the other computer, then it should connect to it without needing Discovery.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I mean, if I were to go and type in the path to another computer, it connects and I can see all the files on another computer.
Yeah.
It's just this, saying, this Discovery where I can just go to the file manager, bring this up, find the computer, and follow it that way versus then trying to remember the command line or whatever you want to call it to find that computer, file,
The other setting you need to make sure is on is you want to be on a private network and not a public network. In that Discovery option, you can choose whether you're on your private network or public network.
Okay.
And on public, be sure sharing is off, Discovery is off, everything is off on public. Because you want to be on a private network, especially on a laptop that you might take into public. So you go to your coffee shop and you're sharing all your files to public, which is bad.
Okay. All right. I'll look into that. Sounds like a good thing. And hopefully it'll make it work on Monday.
All right. Yep. Good luck. Thanks. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And for all of those of you who have Monday off for President's Day, very exciting. George Washington... And Abraham Lincoln celebrated on that day. Very exciting. And we're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dennis. What's up?
Hey, I was calling about that networking issue because I had the same problem. My computer network at my small office, I had about 11 computers, and all of a sudden they couldn't all see each other.
Yeah.
And I Googled it and tried all the things that you were saying, and then I stumbled upon the problem. Change your work group name. Windows did something with the default work group name. If you just use work group, doesn't work. I changed it to my name. All the computers could see each other again.
All the computers have to be in the same named work group, too.
They were.
They were all
in work group,
yep.
But they couldn't see each other.
Sometimes
I went around to every computer and gave them all a new work group name, all the same. Yep.
Sometimes by changing the work group name, you're telling Windows, hey, here's a new name, you know, go out and look again.
Right. Nice. Thank you.
But then I also tried switching it back to the default work group to see if it would then work again. It would not work.
Right.
Windows really wants you to set up a home group, which is different yet.
Right. Home group versus work group.
Yeah, but maybe in my business, I have it all set up on work group, and it all worked for years until about... months ago.
Yep.
Well, never assume that something that worked yesterday will work tomorrow on Windows.
Because
that's silly.
Yeah,
it's just not going to happen.
Then you soon become the first three letters of that word.
That's right.
And some update changes
though,
something.
And I found this accidentally. Just change all your computers to the new work group name.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks.
There you go.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too. Excellent. That's very, very good, Dennis. Thank you. And I'm sure Rich is still listening because, well, why wouldn't he be?
Yeah.
Exactly. So... very nice. Change the work group name. And I wonder if he's got it set up to be a public network and it won't let you use the word work group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would let you use maybe home group, but not work group.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's
or just name it whatever he wants.
Well,
Go around. You know, he could rename it whatever he wants. But like I say, so many folks are surprised at this, but Windows doing it to protect you. And that's why once in a while they do get things right.
Right.
And that they're trying to change it back. Just if you want to go back and open it up, then it's your responsibility to do that. They're just trying to keep you and your machine safe.
For the longest time, Windows defaulted to all file sharing on and share your entire hard drive everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there were stories about people, especially in the early days of broadband internet, where you go to your network control panel and you'll see everybody's computer everywhere on your ISP.
Apple did the same thing in the beginning. I remember many times putting a file on somebody's Mac that said, you need to close up your network.
Yep. And eventually they both set to, you know, file sharing is off.
Their policies.
Well, file sharing is off by default. See, it depends on what tech support questions you want to get. Now we're getting questions, I can't share files. Well, because file sharing is off because it's not safe.
Right. So, yeah, it's, I'm glad that it's off. I would rather see you have to turn it on and be secure by default.
Yep.
But it does. It's exactly. You're exactly right. Which tech support questions do you want to answer?
Yeah.
And I get it. It's a very weird problem to have that you don't know quite what is worse for you.
Yeah.
You know. So I get it. But I would much rather. The way it is now, security is on by default, and you have to actively turn it off in certain instances.
That's the way the early
and I much prefer that.
the early firewalls were the same thing. Allow everything through. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But now
right.
it's allow nothing through unless you
right.
say.
Deny all and then allow these yep. things. And that makes sense. It does. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Rochester, New York. Hi, Rich. What's up?
I have a problem. I have a 2009 MacBook OS 10.11.6, Microsoft Office 2008, and something is changing my RTF documents to open in Microsoft Word. I have them set to open in text edit, and then one day I come in and they're all opening in Word. I set them back. I go to the, get information. I do it as a default, but it just keeps happening periodically.
Yeah, it's probably Microsoft trying to be helpful.
Yeah.
The RTF format was originally developed by Microsoft, and so Word is probably just going to keep taking it over. There is something in the Mac called the launch database that is where those files are the settings are stored as to which program you want to open your files. It could be that something in the launch database has been corrupted and it's forgetting your choice. There is a utility called Onyx, and I'll post a link here. Different versions for every version of the OS you're running, and one of its features is to rebuild your launch index. So then you set RTF to be text edit, and it should remember it.
Okay, so great. So I find Onyx and use that to do it.
Yep. That will rebuild your launch index.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
It's kind of like the open with command in Windows.
There's
open with on the Mac where you tell it to always use this certain program.
Right, and then Word says, well, that was silly. I'm going to take this back again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't load Word or anything anymore. That's just me.
Yeah.
Word is a lovely program and a credit to the entire human race, but I don't use it. sorry, that was rude, but there you are. All right.
A lot of people think they have to. They don't know there are other choices, including many really good free choices. But that's what they're used to using at work. And now even that is changing. More companies are moving to Google Drive, Google Docs, or Open Office, and getting away from the Microsoft licensing payments.
Well, exactly. And only the very, very highest and most esoteric users need Word.
Yep.
You know, for the longest time, if you were in the law industry, you used WordPerfect
mm-hmm.
because they had so many things, specific yep. special add-ons for the legal profession.
And it started with an empty screen and a blinking cursor.
And it's very, very non-distracting. You can get close to that, I think, with Google Docs, but not all the way there. But at any rate, yes, people need to be aware that there are alternatives, and there are free alternatives, and there are really good free alternatives. So we need to see more of that, whether you use Google Docs or LibreOffice or, any one of the other online systems. I don't think iWork online is free.
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Oh, and it comes free with all new Apple devices.
Oh, there
now.
You go. Then.
They keep going back and forth between charging you for it and giving it to you free. We think there's someone at Apple who has a friend at Microsoft, and every now and then, well, you can't give away this for free because we want to sell them that. Okay.
Yeah, right.
And then
right.
you have to buy this, but now it's included free.
I have not yet forgiven Apple for HyperCard, so I believe anything bad about them
yep.
now. Cannot give up that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Bill?
Hi, guys. I have two questions. First of all, on my Chromebook, I'm not getting a full charge all the time.
How old is it?
About a year now.
How full does it go?
It goes to about 93, sometimes 96 or 97, but I don't often get the full charge light. That blue light.
I've seen that on several different brands of laptops. I know Apple does it too. If your battery has a charge in it, it doesn't push it all the way to the top. so that it doesn't like overcharge. So if you're at 10% and plug it in, it would go to 100. But if you're at 90% and plug it in, it won't, because it doesn't want to run through your cycle count. So the big thing with the lithium batteries now is the cycle count on how many times it's charged and discharged. And that's what can wear out the battery. Are there utilities for chrome that give you your battery health? Your full charge capacity?
Right down in the corner, there's a little thing that tells you it's 96%.
That's the current charge. There's another rating called full charge capacity.
Right. I'm pretty sure you can go to the store, though, and download an app for it.
Yeah.
There's so many items up there that you can download and put on the Google Chromebook. It's unreal. And now that you can go to the Play Store also, for some of the newer ones, there's virtually nothing that you...
Okay. Yeah, there's a good one for the Mac called Coconut Battery. So your battery starts at, say, 3,500 milliamp hours. That's your full charge capacity. After a year, your full charge might be down to 3,000 milliamp hours. So 100% only goes to 3,000. And that's the weirdness of how lithium batteries age. So at the end of its life, 100% could mean 5 minutes. But it's still 100% charged.
Right.
Strange.
Yeah.
Strange. Okay, thank you. The other question is, do you know anything about these new nanotech screen protector things instead of the glass or cover that for protecting your screen? You got this nanotech wipe on?
I have seen that. You mean the nanotech cloths?
Well, it comes in a cloth, but you wipe it onto the phone and then it dries like in 10 minutes.
Right. And it's essentially a liquid that is supposed to protect your screen.
Right.
I haven't had a chance to play with them yet, but I'm not too sanguine about them working.
I've got my Pixel, and I've got the glass one on this, and I am so thankful that I have the glass one on there, because stupidly, I carry it in my back pocket, and at one time, I happen to have a screwdriver, and I put it in my back pocket, and I bent over, and I thought I could crack the screen. And I was, oh, shoot, what it's going to cost to repair that. What I had cracked only was the glass protector. It actually protected the screen on my new phone, and I immediately went out, got another one put on it, and it was guaranteed, so they reimbursed me.
Nice. Yeah, I found a couple of blogs that are trying to compare the liquid screen protector versus just a regular tempered glass one. And that's one of the big things they say, is that the biggest con is the liquid ones are less impact protection and less scratch resistance. But they're a lot lighter than the actual glass protection as well.
Well, you know, you look at the ads in that and the different videos on them, and of course they're trying to sell you something, so
yeah.
You get that sort of thing. But the other thing is, my wife and I are thinking of going to Samsung S8s, the Galaxy S8s. They're glass on both sides.
Yeah, they're glass on both sides. In general, the tendency toward... which I blame Apple for this as well, the tendency toward thinner, lighter, sexier generally means more fragile.
Mm-hmm.
They can bend, they can break. So you buy this super light, super sexy phone, and then you throw a big bulky outer case on it in order to protect it because it's too fragile. So it's just silly all the way around. But the fact that they're coming with glass backs now means you've just got twice as much glass to break.
And I don't have a screen protector for the back.
Right, exactly. And they're now testing new glass, glass that's embedded with diamonds and another one that's embedded with something else. I forget what it is. That are supposed to be much, much stronger and better, but we won't see those for a couple of years easy.
Yeah. Okay, well, what I'm actually going to do is probably put it in. I've ordered an outer box already for the new phone, so we're going to put it in that, but I'm also considering wiping it with nanotechnology on both sides.
Yeah, it can't hurt.
Having the best of both worlds.
Right. It can't hurt, but I'm not entirely certain.
Yeah.
It'll help any.
The outer box is going to protect the outside, but, you know, like you say, still the glass screen. If you accidentally, like I did, rub something up against it.
Well, the outers have a front. Well, if you get the outer defender is the one of the bigger ones. It has front acrylic protection as well.
Mm, okay.
And you can put your phone in it backwards.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I'm not the thing. Most of the nanotech stuff I've seen is really supposed to protect you from bacteria as opposed to protecting the screen. At least that's the ones I've seen. But, you know, if it also protects the screen, that's great.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep. Have fun. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, of course, we're celebrating the Festival of Fornicalia today. Also of Quirinus. Quirinalia, rather, for the god Quirinus, who's the god of the oak spear. I think it's important to know these things.
TMI.
I'm Italian, and this is my my heritage. All right, let's talk about the HomePod. Apple's new smart speaker apparently can discolor wooden surfaces, including oak. Quirinus,
yeah.
Leaving a white mark where they are placed. Apple has suggested that owners may have to re-oil furniture if the HomePod is moved. Boy, has Apple fallen since the days of Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
He would never have allowed that out the door. The HomePod went on sale last week after having been delayed from its original 2017 release date. Apple updated its help page to suggest placing your HomePod on a different surface if customers were concerned. It hurts when I do this, doctor. Don't do this.
Yeah.
It is not unusual for any speaker with a vibration-dampening silicone base to leave mild marks when placed on some wooden surfaces, they said. The marks can be caused by oils diffusing between the silicone base and the table surface and will often go away after several days when the speaker is removed from the wooden surface. If not, wiping the surface gently with a soft, damp, or dry cloth may remove the marks. If a mark persists, clean the surface with the furniture manufacturer's recommended cleaning process. That's, wow. Stuart Miles, founder of the gadget review site PocketLint, said he had never seen anything like this problem. He said the HomePod left a mark on his kitchen worktop within 20 minutes. To clear it, I had to sand the wood down and then re-oil it. It wasn't the end of the world for us, but if you bought an expensive Scandinavian sideboard or some beautiful piece of wooden furniture and then got a mark on it from the speaker, you can imagine the horror.
Yeah, I'd be a little ticked.
Yeah. The problem has also been experienced by New York Times reviewer and the 9to5 Mac news site, as well as by members of the public. The New York Times wire cutter site said Apple told it that the marks can improve over several days after the speaker is removed from the wooden surface. Apple added that if marks did not improve, then customers could try cleaning the surface with the manufacturer's suggested oiling method. It is not yet clear if the problem affects all HomePod speakers or just a sample of the initial production run. The HomePod appears to need contact with the surface that it's on to resonate and create the powerful bass. Miles said, I put it on a coaster to see if that would combat leaving a mark, but that destroyed the bass qualities, so that's not a fix to the problem.
What about feet?
Well, that would be the same problem.
And every other speaker with rubber feet does the same thing, too, including Sonos and other high-end speakers.
Yeah, that's not a point. The point is not that other people do it. Apple does it. And frankly,
it wasn't a problem until Apple did it, because every other speaker does it, too.
People expect more of Apple. I've said this for decades.
Yep.
People expect more of Apple, and when Apple is just run-of-the-mill, people are angry.
Because they set the bar a lot higher.
They set the bar higher, and they don't hold themselves to that bar, and that makes people angry. And people will say, Steve Jobs would never have let this happen. You know, he was fanatic about this stuff. According to one furniture polish advice site, the most common causes of white marks on furniture are heat and moisture. One blogger who closely follows the company was surprised by the development. Anyone who runs into this should be outraged, wrote Daring Fireball's John Gruber. Apple has made products that go on shelves and tables for years, and I've never seen a report of damage to a surface.
Nobody's ever moved it before.
This seems like that's exactly right. This seems like an issue that should have been caught during the. And here, this is true. This seems like an issue that should have been caught during the period when HomePod was being widely tested at home by many Apple employees. So, do you have a HomePod? What's underneath it? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
My coffee cup leaves a ring on my wood, too.
Yeah, but it's not by Apple.
Yeah.
I have an Apple coffee cup. It does not leave a ring.
You don't put anything in it.
But I don't put anything in it.
It's pencil, and it doesn't vibrate.
It's a pencil holder right now.
Also, doesn't vibrate like the speaker.
We have a plant growing in one of ours.
but it's not, again, it's not that it's so unusual that something with a silicone base leaves a mark. That's to be understood. The problem is it's Apple, and by not telling people this might happen, it looks like they simply didn't know. And that's a mortal sin with Apple. They're supposed to know everything about their products. Now, again, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have expected it, because you're right. If something has a silicone base or silicone feet, and that's why most people use rubber feet, but if it's got silicone at the bottom, then it is possible that it will leave a ring.
There was probably a discussion at Apple from some engineer, and the manager said, well, duh. We don't need to tell anyone about that. They should know that.
Right. Whereas had it still been Steve Jobs, he would have said, fix it.
Yeah.
Fix it. Not, oh, duh. He would have said, fix it. And that's the other thing that people, you know, people who remember the days when there was no thing on an Apple product that was too small for Steve Jobs to make sure was perfect to now. Yeah. So it leaves a mark. Everything does. So what? It angers people, and I think rightfully so. When you pay as much, you know, if I pay $250 for this laptop, and maybe there's a little scratch here, or you know, the when I close the lid, it makes a tiny little marker. I'm thinking, I spent $250. I spent $1,500. It dang well better not have a problem.
Yeah, make me coffee in the morning.
Well, that's exactly right. And so that's an issue at hand, and not a lot of people have HomePods yet. And the real question is going to be, will this stop some people from buying them? Because if you have to put it on a surface to get the base, and putting it on a surface makes that ring, then people are just going to have to find places to put it where they don't care if there's a ring.
Or get another piece of wood to set it on.
Right.
A small piece of wood to set it on.
Go home and pick up all the knickknacks on your shelves already. You'll see lots of rings.
No, you won't, and here's why. Most of them don't have silicone bases, and most of them do not vibrate. Part of the problem is it's not just that there's a silicone base, but because of the vibration, that silicone is being ground into the wood all the time.
Because it's actually...
Minutely, but it is being ground into the wood, and that's different from I sat a Hummel on my shelf 14 years ago, and it's never moved. That's not going to cause a ring, even if there is silicone.
It's probably glued itself down, and you can't
move it. That's a separate issue. That has to do with the cheap varnish you use.
Yeah, because it, literally, as it's vibrating, it's pounding itself down on the
surface. And that's exactly what the problem is. Yeah. Not that it has a silicone base.
No.
But because that silicone base
is vibrating
part
of the wooden surface.
Right. There's the giant subwoofer at the bottom of a HomePod that's pounding that thing up and down all the time, only minutely, microscopically maybe, but it's doing it, and that is grinding the silicone into the wood.
Yeah. Are you saying it's all about the bass?
It's all about the bass.
All about the bass, not
the
treble?
Not the treble.
It's going to be a song there.
There could be. Find it in the system.
I'm sure we have a copy of it. Don't do it. It'll just get YouTube angry again. I understand why it happens. And if you stop and think about it, you're absolutely right. Anybody who has any understanding of anything will go, well duh.
Yeah.
I should have expected that.
Well, see, and this is where, you know, they could always come back and blame Steve Jobs.
Right. If only he hadn't died.
because, dang, he set the bar too high that we can't always achieve it.
As big a pain in the neck as Steve Jobs was, he was brilliant.
Oh, he was.
And he really made every single thing Apple put out the door perfect.
He set
And that's
higher,
not true anymore.
He set a much higher standard of the way he wanted things run, and that's why Apple at the time, they were very, you know, proprietary, and if you wanted Apple, you paid that price because you knew you were getting the qualities because Steve Jobs set that bar that high, and you could be banked on getting what you paid for.
Well, part of that, of course, is the problem of a cult, right?
No,
when you
too.
Are, whether you're Steve Jobs or you're Bill Gates, when you are the visible head of the company, and you say, I built, I made, I did, I wrote, I did, then people are going to look at you as the cult of personality. The cult of personality is going to look at that person as the company. And when that person steps down, as Bill Gates did, or dies as Steve Jobs did, the people who were in that cult of personality feel betrayed and will always believe that the company is less than it was.
Oh, definitely.
Whether that's true or not. You know, I facetiously said I blame Steve Jobs and blah, blah, blah. But there are people who will believe that and
because
who will assume
the,
it's true.
Like you said, because of the standards they set.
And they're well, not and being the cult of now. Personality.
And they're not being met now.
Right.
And that's where that cult is getting very depressed.
Right.
That, the you know, these things are slipping. And whether it be Microsoft, you know, PC or Mac side, they're both, you know, being displeased because, you know, they're getting shoved this stuff, even with the Windows. You know, they're being told, well, you got to go to Windows 10 because this is the way it is and blah, blah, blah. And this, they're getting very disgruntled.
And we're not special anymore. We can't lord it over you.
Right. And that's one of the things that's particularly interesting about the way Google runs. Google has no cult of personality.
Right.
You don't think of any of the people at the head of the company. In fact, it's hard to name them.
Yeah.
But, you know, so when you buy a Chromebook, it's got Google's OS. You don't think of Bill Gates. You know, when you used to look at Windows, you'd think and something went wrong in a Windows machine, you'd say, doggone Bill Gates, doggone Steve Ballmer. Something goes wrong.
And how
in
long has Bill Gates not been at
well,
Nexus?
Exactly.
A decade or more?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, how many people say doggone Sundar Pichai? Yeah, right?
I mean, yeah.
You say doggone Google, but it's not a cult of personality. You don't invest yourself in a person. You invest yourself in the company. It's Google Docs, and all you know is the company.
Yeah.
So, you know, nobody remembers the guy who wrote Gmail. He was, by the way, from Rochester, New York, by the way. But nobody remembers him. What people remember is it's Google's Gmail.
Yep.
That's what the G stands for. And so it's hard to put a cult of personality on a place that essentially has no names. And you know, it's SpaceX is Elon Musk. You're done. That's who it is. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from we've had everybody from Irondequoit to Rochester today. Bob from Irondequoit, what's up?
Hi, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Not bad. My question has to do with I'm on Linux.
Yep.
And I am trying to go through a web browser to bring up Spectrum's TV lineup where you can watch it on your computer.
Uh-huh.
And it comes up fine, but there's no video to it. I mean, it brings up all the menus and stuff, but there's no video to it.
All right, what version of Linux are you running?
Yeah.
Ubuntu, Xubuntu, Debian.
Oh, it's Mint. It's Mint 18.2, I think.
Okay. Okay.
And then what codec does Spectrum use and that you need to put into your computer?
Right. Most of the... hold on. Proprietary codecs. Most versions of Linux does not, and Mint 18 does not install something called the multimedia codexes by default. And that's because, as you know, Linux is by definition pure, pure open source, and most of the codecs are not open source. Now, they provide them to you, but they don't install them because that's now your choice, not theirs. So what you can do is from the menu, go to sound and video. I believe this is correct on 18. I'm not running 18 at the moment. But if you go to the menu, under sound and video, you can install the multimedia codecs.
Okay.
Or you can bring up the installation. If you're installing it fresh, of course, that's an option. That's a checkbox. But in a pre-installed system, click on menu, then sound and video, and then install multimedia codecs.
Then the next problem is that Spectrum uses Flash to play videos, and I don't think you can get Flash for Linux.
You can get a Flash-like product.
Well, actually, I did, because when you click on a button, and it comes up, and it brings up Adobe Flash, and it goes and it says, you know, you have 32-bit, 64-bit system.
Right.
So I did download the,
Yeah, but they discontinued it in 2012. So every exploit from 2012 is vulnerable in your computer.
Right. Listen, we have to take a break. Please stay on the line. But we have to take a quick break. Back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Bill from around, Bob from around Coit, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites, and it's right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Bob from Around Coit on the line. Still there, Bob?
Still here.
Okay, two things. Well, first, which browser are you using?
I was using Chromium.
Chromium.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of things. You could try downloading Real Chrome. The Real Chrome browser from Google. That has its own built-in Adobe Flash, which works and is safer than real Adobe Flash. But under Chromium, well, that's a separate issue.
And I need to revise my earlier statement. Adobe did discontinue Flash for Linux in 2012. They brought it back in 2016, but they're killing it completely for everybody in, was it 2020?
2020 or something, yeah.
So I posted a article from the Mint Guide on how to install the latest Adobe Flash in Linux Mint.
Okay.
Yeah. But
Chrome is often the easiest way to do it because it has the Flash player built in and it keeps it up to date itself. That's the big problem with Flash is we think the bad guys just have a giant list of exploits because every time there's a new version, there's a new exploit very quickly, and Adobe has to update Flash so frequently, the bad guys are now making fake Flash update notices too.
Right.
Okay. Real quick, where would I go and get the real Chrome for Linux?
Chrome.google.com?
Yeah.
Okay.
It might be in your...
because that does an auto detect and says which Chrome do you need.
Right, right, right. So you should be able to go to either chrome.google.com or google.com/chrome. They both work.
Okay.
And then you see just a big screen that says browse fast, and then you click download Chrome, and it says, oh, you're on this operating system. Here you go.
Then it needs to know whether you want the DEB version or the RPM version. What do you need for Mint? Do you know?
I don't run Mint anymore, but you'll either want the DEB or the RPM.
Okay. I think it's Deb. I think Mint.
I believe Mint is a Debian derivative, so it would be the DEB version. But I honestly don't remember. It's been a long time since I've run Mint. But yeah, I should throw it on one of my VMs.
Well, let me ask you a quick question then. What would be better to run on an older ThinkPad? Is there a better Linux program?
No. It's fine. How much RAM do you have?
If I'm not mistaken, it's 4 megabytes of RAM.
4 gig?
Or 4 gig.
Yeah, 4 meg wouldn't do you a lot. but no, I personally have Linux. I'm using Xubuntu, but 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. They're both Debian derivatives. I'm using a Linux on an old 2 gig ThinkPad. That's how old this one is, and it runs just fine. I don't see any reason to change to something else. It should run pretty fast and pretty clean. The big thing is, because it's Linux, you do have to do a little more setup than you would with other programs, and this is one of those things you have to set up a little differently. The way most versions of Linux work is they are designed to run purely, that is to say, with only open source stuff. So if you need a special closed source driver, you have to load that yourself separately. And you can, there are things that will help you do that in the menu, but you have to go click them, right? Because they don't load by default. There's often a place in the setup where you can check that, but most people don't look at or read any of the setup stuff. They just keep hitting next until they get somewhere. But even afterwards, you can load the proprietary codecs and the proprietary other stuff, proprietary drivers. You'll often find that actually can speed up your machine, particularly on something like a ThinkPad.
Okay. And I just wanted to say, I did call a couple of weeks ago, and I had a problem with LibreOffice, where the database kept turning off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And actually, they made an adjustment because they have a new version, and I loaded that in, and it works fine.
Oh, nice. Very good. And last time you called, weren't you running Sylvia?
I was running, Sylvia. But I didn't. I downgraded, or I went back to where I knew it was working, because I was doing that project, and I needed to get this project up and running. But I saw the new version, so I said, let me try it. What can happen? The more so, I have to re-download everything. And no, it actually worked.
Excellent. Yeah, Linux Mint is a terrific product. It really, really is. And there are multiple versions. There's Mate and there's Cinnamon and there's something else, I think. And they're very good. But again, because they are pure Linux, you do have to do a little bit of extra work to get the proprietary stuff to load.
Okay. The wonderful thing about Linux is there's so many to choose from.
Exactly.
I just found a chart of all of them to choose from.
You probably didn't. I suspect that not all of the... Is that more than a day old? And probably not all the versions of Linux that are out there. All right, thanks, Bob.
Thank you very much.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Actually, yeah, this is of 2016, so
it's
a year
old. Oh, there
you go.
You're way west.
It's too small to read on the paper, though.
It's kind of amazing how much Linux has taken over. You know, every year since, I think, 1922 is supposed to be the year of Linux on the desktop, and you know, it never happened. But suddenly, guess what? I'm running Linux on my desktop. It's Chrome.
Yep.
And many people are running Linux, particularly on slightly older hardware, because you get new life out of old hardware. In fact, I had my laptop that I had Windows on. Locked up. The last, remember that update that people had trouble with?
Yeah.
Just it bricked it. It completely killed it. I said, okay, I'm done now with Windows. I'm done. I could fix it, mm-hmm. but I don't care anymore. I'm done. So I put Linux on it. It's faster.
Yeah.
It's faster, and I'm happy. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is David from Brighton, New York. Hiya, David. What's up?
Hi. Love your show.
Thank you.
I've got a question concerning compatibility of my camera with my MacBook Air. I have a MacBook Air with their latest operating system. I can't remember which it is, but at any rate, I use their onboard photos application for managing my photos. But I also have a Nikon Coolpix point-and-shoot camera. And recently I noticed that when I connect the camera to the computer, using a USB cable, the computer no longer recognizes the camera. And I was told that this is possibly because of updates to the operating system of Mac that have created the problem. And I'm wondering if you think that's the case and if there's a workaround.
Well, the usual workaround is to don't plug the camera into the computer, take the SD card out and plug that into the computer. And then it's just JPEGs on an SD card. Okay. What model Coolpix was it?
I'm told I need, in order to do that, I have to get a chip reader that plugs into the USB port.
On the MacBook Air?
Yes.
Does your camera use an SD card or a different kind of card?
Uses an SD card.
Yeah, the Air's got an SD card reader.
It does?
Yeah, every Mac does.
Oh, boy. I never noticed it. I better take another look. But if it doesn't, would one of those chip readers that plug in do the job for me?
Yeah, it should work.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, they're pretty generic hardware, so it shouldn't be a problem.
Right. Well, someone suggested maybe it was a faulty USB cable, but I don't think that's the case. So I do.
It's not impossible, but it's unlikely.
Yeah.
It's an old camera, and I'm probably is due to updates.
Which MacBook Air is it?
So, thank you very much.
Well, hold on.
Which MacBook Air is it?
I bought it in 2013.
Oh, it's new.
I'm not near the machine right now.
Yeah, the 2008 model didn't have an SD card reader.
But the 2013 does.
Yeah, the new ones do.
Okay, I'll double check. And
just a little slit in the side.
Yeah.
Right.
A lot of. Okay. I was working with a customer the other day. Same thing on her Mac Mini. I take the card out of the camera, plug it into the computer. It reads just fine. What'd you do? Well, I plug the card into the reader. What reader?
Yeah.
The reader that's built into the computer.
Well, how many of us don't really take a look at the side of our computer?
And it is a little tiny slot on the side of the computer. Right. Now, I don't have one on my new Mac, which is annoying, but...
Right. Well, I have one on my Chromebook.
Yeah. So if your Mac is too old or too new, it doesn't have one.
Right.
But right in the middle there, it does.
But if it's just
but
right...
You're supposed to be using your iPhone with PhotoStream, so it does it automatically.
Well, no. I'm not that... No, I'm technologically challenged. I do have an iPhone.
We prefer to think of you as a rebel, David.
Yeah.
So, but at any rate, I think you resolved the issue. So thank you very much.
There you go. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am a big fan of the ability to move SD cards around.
Yeah.
It makes life so much easier. It saddens me. Well, I get it. You know, Macs have to be thinner than they are and et cetera, et cetera. And it's never too thin or thin enough. And, you know, if you've got to have that extra millimeter, literally.
Yeah.
It's too bad. Well,
and the card readers take up quite a bit of space too. So that's part of it as well. But it's
It raises the cost by a nickel.
Yeah, in the earlier days when there were a dozen different card formats, it made sense to use an external reader and a 45-in-1. You know, 45
right,
cards.
Right.
Today, almost every camera uses an SD card.
Right, or a micro SD card.
Yeah, that's becoming the bigger trick. If you have a micro SD card, then you need an SD adapter.
Right.
That
most
probably
of them
came with a camera.
Yeah, exactly. Or when you bought the micro SD card, it usually comes with a carrier.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up? Bill?
This is Tom.
Oh, Tom. Sorry, Tom. Where are you calling from?
Sure, Brighton.
Oh, there you go. Okay, what's up?
I changed the battery in my iPhone 5. It was going bad, and so I did go through the procedure, the online procedure, to replace the battery.
Sure.
But I seem to have a problem that's common to people who have done this, which is the home button has stopped working.
Yeah, the cable is very tiny and very fragile and very easy to break.
So what is the... Can I just order a new cable from one of the online sources?
It depends on which end broke. You may need a new home button. You may need a new logic board.
Logic board. That sounds a little more...
Oh, so it doesn't plug in. Solders on?
Some of them are soldered. Is it the 5 plane or...
It's a 5S.
Okay, that's completely different. Yep.
Yeah.
5S
is
different. Same sort of thing. It depends on where the cable is broken and which end, and if it's broken on the logic board end or the button end.
Okay. I assume a logic board is a bit more expensive than the home button.
Yeah.
Mm. So you're almost guaranteed that that's the end that broke.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. Is there any way to diagnose which part was broken?
Replace one and see if that fixes it.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's so hard to know because the wires are so tiny. I suppose if you had a big enough magnifying glass and they were broken not on the inside, you know, because there's a rubber sheath, well, not rubber, but there's a sheath around the wires. If it's broken right at the end, you might, with the right magnifier, be able to see it.
Okay.
And it's such a tiny connector. And there's that little shield that goes back on the top of it. I always have trouble getting that shield back on, right?
Right.
It's more likely to be on the home button end than it is on the logic board end.
Okay.
But if you damaged the socket on the logic board while you were prying the shield or the connector up, that could have also damaged the logic board.
Yeah, well, the home button, I think the cost for that's on the order of $20 to $30, so that might be the best route to go for
it. It certainly can't hurt to try it.
Yeah. All right. I got another job ahead of me.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry, Tom.
Right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Micro tweezers. It's ridiculous the how tiny everything is inside there. Because inside the phone is mostly battery.
Right. And it was not designed to be replaced, right? It's not supposed to be a user-replaceable part.
It's not user-replaceable, but it is replaceable.
Right.
Because users without the skill or experience tend to break other things.
Right, and as Tom found. Well, yeah. I
fix it, which is the general teardown place. Right. They rate it moderately difficult, and there's 29 steps.
Zero.
Any one of which could damage the rest of the phone permanently.
Permanently, right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenick, Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Eckert.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, contrary to the song, don't everybody get up. We're going to sit down for a little while and do a whole lot more sound bites, and we have Dave from Greece on the line. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
I actually have Steve from Greece.
Steve, hi, Steve.
I get that a lot, too. People call me Dave all the time.
And I get called Steve.
Because they only listen to the last syllable, not the first syllable. Okay.
Sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys just created a problem for me, and I know you can fix it. You were talking about creating your own VPN.
Yeah.
And I started doing some research on that, and I hope you'll go into more detail. But when I typed in ipconfig, or try to run ipconfig, it flashes and goes away immediately. I can't get any information off it.
You have to open a terminal window first, or a command line prompt first, then type it. So what's happening is the command is running, and then it's closing the window.
Right, so if you open the window first, what operating system are you using?
Windows 10.
So just type in down that little window, CMD. That will then pop open a window. You're going to be at the C prompt, and you can then type in whatever you want to type in, your IP address.
And it will stay open.
Yeah, and it stays open.
Well, sure, make a it easy.
Exactly.
You could do MS config, you know, I mean, IP.
Well, hold on a second. Commands. In fact, if you're going to run IP config, you want to run it as admin. So the best way to do that is hold the window key down and hit X. That brings up a menu. One choice is command prompt as admin.
Right, yeah.
And then bring that up, and then you can type ipconfig and go from there.
Okay, sounds excellent. I will give all of that. Thank you, guys. I knew you'd be able to save it. Now, Nick, you were talking about you have your own VPN. Is that the Windows 10 VPN or a different system?
No, I'm running it on a Linux box out in the cloud.
Well, and part of the issue is there's two halves to the VPN, the client and the server.
Right.
The basic OSs only have the client built in. So you need to have a server OS that has the VPN server at the other end.
Right. You've got to have two sides. If you only have one side, you're only doing half the job.
Right.
Now, you can use somebody else's VPN for the other side. But now you're into that problem of who do you trust?
Right.
Or
you build your own server and run your own VPN.
Which is what I did.
And then trust yourself.
Well,
and
I need to build a server before I can do my own VPN.
Well, you got to have that other end. Otherwise, there's no point in doing the front end.
Makes all kinds of sense. I guess I'll stay with Pure.
There you go.
Yep. Now, there are a couple of pretty decent free VPN services that are open standards. OpenVPN is probably one of the biggest ones. And they have free solutions and commercial solutions as well for all the major OSs, too.
Right. Creating a VPN is not difficult if you understand. For example, I did it on Linux. Now, I understand Linux. I understand how to start up a VPN. I understand how to run a VPN. And that's all fine. But if you don't understand all that stuff, it's not an easy thing to do. Okay, yeah.
And I don't, so it probably I'll just I find setting up. I can do a lot of things on computer. Networks are my nemesis.
Yeah, I understand that. Absolutely understand that. All right.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Steve. Have fun.
There actually was a big news story a few months ago about one of the more popular VPN services was actually spying on you and logging everything and reporting everything they said they don't do to keep your privacy. They were actually doing.
Right, and in addition to that, there's the one we read at the top of the show, which is the, shockingly, the Facebook VPN is spying on you. Huh, what a surprise. Oh, that was a very good throw. All right, back to the phones. Our next guy, do we take a break? No.
You just came out of it.
I know, that's why I was looking, though. Back to the phones, our next caller is Larry from Penfield, New York. What's up, Larry?
Hi, guys. I'm running Windows 10, and I've been using LastPass for years.
Yeah.
And just a couple of days ago, I was trying to change a password on one of my sites, and I got this message from LastPass saying, sorry, this quest is taking longer than normal when I tried to save the new password. And it did take longer than normal. It never went away. And I couldn't do anything to get rid of it. And I did some searching around, and people had the same message years ago, and they thought it was due to Firefox. And so I tried shutting that down and restarting it. Same deal. Went to Opera. Everything works fine. Went back, and so it updated the password. Went back to Firefox. Same deal. And it's still got the old password information in there. I thought that was all local to my machine.
No, Firefox, though, will store your passwords. So you might have to...
Yeah, but he's talking about LastPass, which is a different product entirely. And what it sounds like is it did not, in fact, update for whatever reason. And it could be any one of a thousand reasons, one of which is network issues. It doesn't have to be your end. It could easily have been the LastPass end or any connection between you and the LastPass server. The way I believe LastPass works, because I haven't paid attention to this in a very long time, but I believe it updates the other end first before it updates your end. If it cannot update the other end, it doesn't update your end because then they're not in sync anymore.
Oh.
I think. I don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that was the result of my testing last time.
But since Opera was able to update it...
The idea, of course, is that if it was a network problem, it was probably a temporary network problem. By the time you loaded Opera and did the save, the network problem was done.
But I went back and tried it again on Firefox, and I thought I couldn't get it to work there.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. I mean, I don't... are you running... Well, you know, we've had this problem over the years with LastPass. For a while back a couple of years ago, it was Chrome. Then it was Firefox. Then it was anything. And then it was nothing. And so we've seen this over and over again. And I don't know. I stopped using LastPass. I use a program called NPass instead. But it is certainly a possibility that LastPass is either having a problem saving passwords.
Or the recent Firefox update changed something and LastPass hasn't updated yet.
Right. Because there was just an update a short while ago.
Right. So I just have to wait it out until they catch up with a fix.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wish I had better information for you, but I don't.
You could always try emailing the LastPass support forums to see if forums.lastpass.com to see if anyone else is having the same issue or a fix for it.
Right.
Okay. You said you're using NPass?
ENPASS, NPass. It's six of one, half dozen of the other, but I found that so far at least... so far, I've had fewer problems with NPass, but that's, you know, your mileage may vary.
Right. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Yeah, the password managers are great, but with anyone that saves your data out in the cloud, you're also at the mercy of the network and whatever server that's on at the other end. And often they're not going to tell you if they had a small glitch on the server. Because a lot of them use a shared service,
mm-hmm.
you know, Bluehost or GoDaddy or one of those. And if they have a small glitch, for example, the service that I'm on, at about 2 in the morning, it slows down like mad for about 10 minutes.
Network backup.
Whatever is going on at the server end.
Yeah,
and of course that's exactly the time that I'm trying to do my backups.
Yeah, or your other story about AWS, somebody left their default password open.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, maybe we'll get to that one when you're using something like AWS. A lot of companies are. Also, don't forget, often these places are doing updates and upgrades, and that slows systems down when that happens. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Stan from Webster, New York. Hiya, Stan. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I noticed here within the past few weeks, I own one of the Android-style phones. I have a Motorola Z2 Force.
Sure.
And I'm noticing that for some reason with my mail account, I use one of those regular accounts that's already applied on the phone to do all your joint accounts and such. But my Yahoo Mail account... has been recently showing an error message saying it couldn't sign in, and I'm not sure what's going on with it. I tried logging on to my Yahoo Mail account the normal way through the websites and such, and it seems to be working fine. I don't know if maybe it's a glitch in the regular Mail app or maybe something else that I'm not seeing, but I don't see any issues. I use the Lookout security app to watch out for any viruses or anything like that, but nothing's coming up as an issue.
Are you using IMAP? Probably.
Just using the regular mail app that came with the phone, where it allows you to join the accounts.
Right. What I would suggest that you do is... The reason I asked if you're using IMAP or POP3 is because if you're using... when you go to look at your mail on the web, do you see all the same mail you see on the phone?
Yes.
Okay, then you're using IMAP. So what I would suggest you do is wipe out your account on the phone. the Yahoo account.
Right.
And reset it up again. All you need is your username and password.
Okay.
It is very possible that there's a glitch somewhere in the little data table that gets saved on your phone. And that by, are you scratching at the phone? Something's making a very odd scratching noise. Anyway, the point here is, it is possible that there was a little glitch somewhere in your phone. If you wipe out the account and reset it up again, because you're saving all the mail on the server using IMAP, you will be able to get all your mail back again, and it shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. All right, that makes sense.
Okie doke.
Thank you guys very much. Appreciate all you guys do. So,
thank you.
Take
good
care
luck.
Of yourselves and enjoy the weekend.
You too. Keep smiling.
And the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that Yahoo has disclosed that every single Yahoo account had their password breached. So if you have not changed your password to Yahoo in the last couple of months, change it now. And that actually...
I think I still have a Yahoo account. And if I do, I probably haven't changed the password in 10 years.
And that's what's happened with a lot of people, because Yahoo is one of the oldest services. Everyone had a Yahoo account. And then Google came along, and you got a Google account and forgot about your Yahoo account. But it's still there.
Right.
And when, for example, when you signed up for Google the first time, it wanted a recovery email, you probably gave it Yahoo. So someone could break into your Google account by having the... password reset instructions sent to your Yahoo account that they can get into because all the passwords were lost.
Right.
A billion Yahoo accounts had their passwords lost. Pretty much everyone ever on Yahoo.
Everyone.
And Verizon still bought them. They did want a lower price, though.
All right. All right. We've got about a minute and a half before the break, so at least we can get the question in from Carl from Pottstown, PA. How are things in PA?
Good. How are you?
Peachy, thanks.
Good. I just wanted to ask a quick question about desktop on Windows 10. Is it possible that I could run software, that you could suggest software, so that I could have more than one desktop, and maybe I could devote each desktop to a, you know, a given subject? One would be for business, one would be for personal, whatever.
Right. Yeah, I do that under Linux, and it's the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
And getting multiple desktops on Windows 10, I'm pretty sure it's not that hard. On Windows 10 itself, you can do that by, on the taskbar, select Task View, and then say New Desktop.
Okay.
And selecting the Task View again lets you see all those desktops, and then you can switch among them.
And the Windows key and Tab will switch between them, and Windows key and then Control D will make a new one.
Right. If you want to do it that way, exactly right. Windows T.
If you're a keyboard guy or a command guy.
Right. Windows key, Control D, create a new desktop. That makes sense. Control D under Windows, a new window desktop. Switching among them is easy too. So yeah, it's easy to do. It's something most people don't do. But I love it because it means that I can put my mail on one and my browser on another and something else on something else, and I can easily focus in on each of them. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are grooving to the tunes here on Jazz 90.1.
Some good ones in there.
Not, I suppose, the kind of thing you think of when you think of sound bites, but it is the kind of thing you think of when you think of jazz.
Yeah, really.
All right. Passports, driver's licenses, and other sensitive documentation for thousands of FedEx customers were left online. This is the thing you were talking about earlier. Possibly for years. And a blunder that left the information available to identity thieves and other malicious actors. Cromtech Security Center said researchers found 119,000 scanned documents stored in a publicly available Amazon S3 bucket, which is essentially a website. The photo ID scans were were accompanied by complete U.S. Postal Service forms that included names, home addresses, and phone numbers of people who requested to have mail delivered by an authorized agent. Citizens from all over the world left their scanned IDs. The data initially were gathered by Bongo International, a company, or perhaps Bonzo International, a company that helped North American retailers and brands sell online to consumers in other countries. FedEx acquired Bongo International in 2014 and eventually changed its name to FedEx Cross Border International, which is, you know, way better. FedEx shut down the service last April, and this was still sitting out there unsecured since last April, well, since for years. The discovery of the customer IDs and the other personal information suggests that not only was the information never properly secured to begin with, but FedEx officials failed to purge the data once the service was discontinued. Cromtech said the information may have been available since 2009. Thursday's Post said Cromtech's researchers made attempts to get in touch with FedEx via FedEx cross-border merchant customer support line and emails. The researchers said they didn't succeed until Tuesday. The unsecured Amazon bucket was taken down on Wednesday. In a statement, FedEx officials wrote, after preliminary investigation, we can confirm that some archived Bongo International account information located on a server hosted by a third-party public cloud provider is secure. The data were part of a service that was discontinued after our acquisition of Bongo. We have found no indication that any information has been misappropriated and will continue our investigation. Of course, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. People, yeah. And people who use Bongo International or FedEx Cross Border International should be on alert. The incident is a good reason why people should avoid turning over personal information when practical. Are you a big FedEx user? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Larry did from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon, guys. Recently, I've been tinkering around with Linux again.
Yeah.
And went to an article in LifeWire and was able to download the Ubuntu operating system onto a USB drive. My issue is I've been tinkering around with it on my MacBook Pro, but I just don't seem to be able to make the jump to dual booting. So the other day I saw another article on LifeWire that says that Chromebook, you know, an inexpensive Chromebook might be a good platform to put it on. Just wonder, what's your opinion on that? Is Chromebook the way to go? Because I don't have any old laptops, anything like that around.
Well, okay, here's the deal. I know lots of people who've put Linux on a Chromebook, and it's not particularly easy because Chromebooks are not designed to dual boot. They're not designed to boot to anything but the Chrome OS, and that's a security feature.
Oh, okay.
It's not impossible.
You have to disable the security feature in order to do that.
Well, that's exactly right, and you can do that. It's not impossible. It's just not easy.
And you might have better luck finding an old used Windows PC laptop to play with then.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, there are a lot of places that sell used laptops. There are a lot of places. You might find a friend who's got one sitting around in a closet.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I most miss about being retired is, you know, every couple of years I'd get a new laptop. And I could take home an old laptop and put Linux on it.
And you'd have to test all of them to make sure they were right for the faculty and students.
Well, then we did that, and we got one to use with the standard loadout on it. But having the old one, I could then put Linux on.
Yeah.
So that
right.
was lovely. But, you can. There are lots of places in town that sell used equipment. And they come with more or less warranty, so go check some out. And for, you know, not particularly a lot of money, as long as it's got 2 gig of RAM.
Yeah, $100 or probably less.
Yeah, and you should be able to throw Ubuntu on it. Now, remember, if you're going to put it on a slow machine or you're going to put it on a machine without a lot of RAM, it's going to be slow.
Okay.
But if what you're doing is, if you're doing that to learn and to play with it, the fact that it's going to be a little bit slow is not a terrible thing.
Right, right. Okay, because, you know, the Chromebooks, as you say, really aren't terribly expensive at all.
No, they aren't.
And the article made it sound like, you know, well, really, this is probably the way to go. But, you know, I'm not a big fan of dual booting. And I certainly, if I'm going to have it on my Wi-Fi system at home, I don't want something with holes in it.
Right, 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 right.
So I guess I'm going to head around and start looking. But I wish I hadn't gotten rid of my old laptops and stuff years ago.
Boy, ain't that the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and,
okay,
and
well,
even one of the things.
You answered my question, and I'll continue to listen.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
One of the things with the Chromebook is you can play with the Chrome OS, which is based on Linux. You can bring up a command line, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I can do whatever. Yeah, here it is.
You don't.
Oh, that's not it. That's
you don't
the,
necessarily
the
need to,
right.
But you can.
Secure shell, but I can.
Yeah.
Right. It's Control T, Control Shift T, Control.
That's a new tab.
Alt T. There it is. Control Alt T. And now I'm in Crush, the Chromium OS shell.
Is it Bash or Born?
Yes. It's the Born Again shell.
Ah.
Bash.
How do you tell what shell you have? You just have to know, right?
Yeah. Well,
is there a shell command to tell you what shell you're using?
Probably.
No, it's a shell game.
Yeah, this
it's
is
a
this,
shell game.
This is a very limited thing, but it does do a lot of stuff. And so, the big thing is Linux is an extremely capable operating system, and it will run on lower end equipment.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been saying that for years.
Yep.
You know, some of your older machines, you know, I remember saying back, oh, you got an old 486 or that, throw Linux on it. You know, it'll still run probably better than the original Windows operating system.
Right. It's a great way to breathe new life into old hardware.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to learn a new operating system. We are not limited to Linux, to Windows or the Mac. We have a third excellent choice, and we have a fourth excellent choice in Chromebooks. And so you don't need necessarily to limit yourself. And in fact, if somebody gives you an old laptop, and Windows is running too slow for you, or there's, you know, an issue, whatever. Like I said, my laptop, the last Windows update bricked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know what? I'm done. I'm done with Windows. I'm just done. I put Linux on it, and it runs like a top, and I'm happy. And I don't need to worry anymore about, is this update going to kill it? Is that update going to kill it? I'm still waiting for my 3D printer, and I hate you more every day. I'm still waiting for my 3D printer, but I'm seeing lots of people who have a very low-end 3D printer that they control through their laptop, and they're all starting to complain now that Windows did an update while they were in the middle of a print and destroyed their print.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm sorry, but oh well.
Yeah.
First, rarely, if I do an update, does it need to reboot. And I mean rarely. I don't think I've rebooted in 3 weeks. And I can reboot. I can rather update my system while I'm doing other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, it just comes up and says, and it's all GUI based. And at the end, it just comes up and says, this system is now up to date. Okay. And I move on.
Yeah.
And I never have to worry about that reboot stuff. And I never have to worry.
Same
about
Same with the Chromebook. I mean, matter of fact, a friend of mine, she just got a Chromebook. So she was asking me, all right, so what antivirus and all that other stuff do I need on this machine? I go, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, no, wait a minute. I don't want to get infected or anything else. I says, you just bought a Chromebook. Problem solved.
Problem solved. And if it needs an update, it updates in the background while you're working
yes.
on it. And then here's how you update. You restart the machine.
Yeah.
So if you are working, you don't even have to pay attention anymore. You're working, you close the machine, you shut it down, right? You go home.
Yeah.
Next day you open it up. Guess what? It's got the new operating system on
it.
And it's
there.
Done.
Yeah. That's like me. I did it, and all of a sudden I discovered I could go to the Play Store now and run Android apps. And it was just there. All I had to do was run it.
Yeah, I just got to pull the trigger and get a new Chromebook, and I just haven't done it yet. You know, I've said this many times. I love spending money on my wife and my daughter. When it comes to me, it's always, I can do that next week. Well, all right. You know what? I hate to be the one to tell you this, but it seems we're done for another week. That music tells me that it's over. It's just over for the week. We'll be back next week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. Go off and celebrate Fornicalia or Quirinalia, and we'll be right here.
Any other alia you have.
And we'll be back right here next week with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we are indeed member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.